Good to see each of you this morning. It is time for us to begin. Glad to have you with us. Got some visitors with us. Certainly glad to have you visiting with us. We're coming to the close of a series of lessons out of the book of Acts. We're in Acts, the 28th chapter. We're going to be beginning about verse 16, 17 in that area if you want to find your place. If anyone needs a copy of the outline that we're following, you raise your hand, we'll bring you one. Does anyone need a copy of the outline out of Acts 28? A couple visiting back here, and Jacob, and there's one over here. You're going to need another one or two. Thank you. Now, as we pick up our story, and that's what we have here in Acts 28 chapter, it's a narrative account. It's the account of Paul arriving in Rome and the events that take place shortly after his arrival there. As we look at that, he has arrived in Rome. He has been dispatched by the centurion that brought them. He has been moved to his housing that he's going to have there. That's as you look in verse 16 of Acts 28, it notes that fact. And when they came to Rome, the centurion delivered the prisoners to the captain of the guard. Paul was suffered to dwell by himself with a soldier that kept him. So Paul here is able to stay in a private quarters, it seems, and has a soldier there that watches over him. So he has a good situation. Providence. I know that it's difficult to define what providence is and when providence occurs, but providentially, God sets Paul up here to preach in Rome. But that's what God had always told him. We can go way back to some time before when he was in Jerusalem, and God promised him that night that you're going to go to Rome, you're going to preach the gospel in Rome. And yet, through all of the events that took place in Paul's life, there were times that if you were living his life, it would have been difficult to see how that was going to happen. You know, Paul was reassured various times by God through the intervening times between Jerusalem and Rome that he was still going to Rome. He's still going to preach the gospel. You think about all of the things that took place in his life between those points. How many times did he stand trial? Three or four times at least. And then that fact of being on the ship and through the storm and then finally shipwrecked and then, what was it, 3 months on the Isle of Malta or Melita? And so during that time, you know, all of these trials going with Paul. But still, God took care of him. God had told him, you're going to Rome, you're going to preach the gospel in Rome. And yet, you know, sometimes through the trials and tribulations of life, it's difficult to see God's play, God's hand in what goes on. Well, maybe it's not meant for us to always see. Maybe it's meant for us to simply trust. Now, Paul's trust was encouraged along the way. You know, he got that encouragement when he was in prison. You're going to Rome. He got the encouragement on the ship. You're going to survive. And all that are we, you're going to survive. So all along the way, God encouraged him. How did God encourage him? He talked to him by what he told him. You know, it's interesting as we live life today. I don't know sometimes, and maybe you've gone through the same thing. As you go through life and certain trials, tribulations come upon your way, maybe it's sickness, maybe it's somebody persecuting or some other things happening, so a financial reverse or occupational reverse or something just not going quite like you wished it would go. And you wonder, why are these things happening? Has not God promised to take care of those who are His, who are serving for His will? Romans 8:28 and following. Yeah, He's promised that. Do we believe it? Now, if we believe that, then we ought to be able to look beyond the trials, tribulation of life, and trust God to bring things where, here's the catch, where He wants them to be, not where I want them to be. So Paul here, he does through this series of events and the providence working all along the way. He comes to Rome. He gets this house of his own. He's able to preach and teach the gospel to the Roman people. Okay, we pick up then in verse 17. Came to pass after 3 days, Paul called the chief of the Jews together, and when they were come together, he said to them, "Men and brethren, though I have committed nothing against the people or customs of our fathers, yet was I delivered prisoner from Jerusalem into the hands of the Romans." So Paul here, it says after 3 days. Why did he wait 3 days? Prior to this 3 day period, what had happened? And that ordeal of the shipwreck, being on the island and finally brought to Rome. He'd been traveling for weeks at least. You know, after a long trip of that nature and all the stress and the things that took place in it, he needed a few days. He said, after 3 days. So after 3 days, he's ready to enter into the work here. He's ready to take care of the things that need to be taken care of. He calls the Jews. Why does he call the Jews? All right, the Jews are the ones that have brought charges against him that brought him to Rome. Why have he called the Jews? That's right, that's one reason. There's more than one reason, though. Amen. These Jewish people were his brethren. He was a Jew. And so he had a special interest in seeing that they were taught the gospel.
Also, they could have been Christian brethren,
couldn't they? There some could have been, but these he seems to be teaching the gospel to them, isn't he? You know, he's confronted them with the fact of the gospel, so they don't know the gospel.
Well, they wasn't paganistic. They already have a belief in God.
Okay, they already had a belief in God, so he has a place to start with them. Matter of fact, is where would you start with a Jew that believed in God? Old Testament law and Old Testament prophets, and that's where he had many times before. They're good. And so at the time that he's ready, that's who he calls. Now, as he calls these Jews, he's got a lot to explain to them. Wonder if they've heard anything about Paul. They've heard about the way. We'll notice that here in a minute. So anyway, he's going to have to make a defense of where he is, what he believes, what he's practicing, and these things. So he explains how he comes. He's there in Rome because the Jewish people have delivered him to the Romans. Right, 18. Who, when they had examined me, would have let me go because there was no cause of death in me. What was the Roman conclusion about Paul? Not guilty. Well, I tell you what, if that factor was just, if it had just been carried out, where would Paul have been? He'd been somewhere else other than Rome. Now, won't you think with me for a moment? Is that not true? If that fact had been carried out in Jerusalem, he'd been in Jerusalem. If that fact had been carried out when he was tried in Caesarea, he'd been in Caesarea. What was God's promise? You're going to go to Rome. And God took him to Rome on the basis that he was found innocent but had to appeal the decision. Isn't that something? God brought about good because he had to challenge what was evil. I wonder if God ever brings about good when we have to challenge what's evil. Sometimes, you know, when you challenge evil, does it seem like that you're losing the battle? You ever feel like when you're challenging evil that you ever have the Elijah syndrome? What's that?
I'm the only one
to serve God. Yeah, I'm the only one. You know, sometimes we need to think through these things. because God can bring about good even though we have to challenge and battle evil for that good to occur. Matter of fact is, most good winds up and occurs because good people fight that battle and overcome it. Thank you. That's right. And so if we don't fight the battle and we don't take the stand, then what? What triumphs then? Evil does. And brethren, we live in a world that evil is running rampant. But good people must stand up for the things that are righteous. That's the only way that the evil can be confronted and overcome. And so that's what Paul did. But the overcoming of that brought him to Rome. Okay, so they would have let him go, no cause of death. 19. But when the Jews spake against it, I was constrained to appeal to Caesar, not that I had ought to accuse my nation of. So he's very careful with what he says here. Why does he appeal to Caesar? He tells us here, why does he appeal to Caesar? All right, the Jews would probably kill him. The Jews still wanted to accuse him of being guilty, and so he appeals to Caesar. Now, did he appeal to Caesar because he had something to bring against the Jewish nation? No, it was not his charge against the Jewish nation that brought him to appeal to Caesar. It was the Jewish nation's charge against Paul that brought him to appeal. So he has no hard feelings, no evil feelings against the Jewish people. He's establishing that with them. Why does he want to establish that? There's a reason.
Well, he had to reveal why he was there, what his army was, where he stood. And the Jews wasn't willing to let the authorities do their thing. They would set him free. Even though they didn't have any charges, they still would set him free because of the Jews.
Okay, and so he has to answer that because he's going to teach these Jews. That's who he's wanting to work with. Now, when the message about Paul gets to these Jews, if he has hidden that problem, what does it look like? He's covered. He's been dishonest. He's been deceitful to them. Paul wasn't that. He puts this out right in the forefront. He wants it to be discussed. Matter of fact, by putting it out in the forefront, he finds out information. He finds out that they know, what do they know about him? No letters. They don't know anything about the charges against Paul. Okay, let's read that. Verse 20, for this cause, therefore, I've called you to see you, to speak with you, because that for the hope of Israel I am bound with this chain. We'll talk about that. And they said to him, we neither received letters out of Judea concerning thee, neither any of the brethren that came showed or spake any harm of thee. And so what he finds out is, message, the word about Paul hasn't gotten there yet. The charges from the Jewish brethren have not reached the Jewish people. The Jewish people has not reached the Jewish people in Rome. They haven't heard this yet. And so from that standpoint, he's on a good footing to talk to them about it. There's no preconceived ideas in their minds about Paul. Now, let's go back to 22. But we desire to... I'm still back up again. Go back to 20. 20 is the verse I don't want us to miss. Okay. For this cause have I called you to see you, to speak with you, because that for the hope of Israel I am bound with this chain. And so he tells the Jewish people why he's called them. Why has he called them? It doesn't say Christ in there. Where does it say Christ in there, Bob? Ah, that's the hope, our hope and Israel's hope. Bob's exactly right. I was trying to play games with him. That's what Paul's talking about here. You know, it is the fact that he comes to these Jewish people. He says, my purpose of calling you, it's not to defend himself. It's not to talk about how he's been mistreated to be there. His purpose of calling them is because of the hope of Israel. What was Israel's hope? What hope did Israel live on for at least 1,500 years? The Messiah is coming. And what's the Messiah going to do when he comes? He's going to set up a kingdom that's going to do what? Huh? Last forever. And it's going to do what for man? It's going to free man from bondage. Now, friends, that's the picture through the Old Testament. That's the picture of what God was going to do when Messiah came. The Christ, the anointed. And over and over again, the prophets gave that picture. And, you know, when they were in the deepest bondage of Babylonian captivity, you know what the hope still was? Messiah's coming. Be free. And when that final prophet of the Old Testament spake, and those final words of the Old Testament were written down, what did it say? Malachi. He's coming. He's coming in Bethlehem, and he will be the Messiah. He will be the Christ. So the Jews for years had looked forward to the hope of Israel. This was their hope. What hope do we have? Heaven? Friends, I see today a sadness among God's people as if there is, because of the things going on in the world, as if there is no hope. There's hope. There's hope for that which is real, that which is eternal. I really, really plead with you this morning to live in prospect of the hope that's set before us. It's easy to turn to that front page of the newspaper every morning and lose hope. It's easy to turn on that TV knob and listen to Good Morning America and see the things that are going on and to lose hope. Romans 8:23, Derek, let's go over to Paul for a minute and let's see what his picture of this is. Verse 24, for we are saved by hope, but hope that is seen is not hope. I want you to read that second line. You turn that page and you go to that front page of the newspaper, that's what you see. That's what you hear. That's never going to give you hope. My friends, you can fill both pockets full of gold and silver coins, and that's not going to give you hope. Something that is not seen is what gives us hope. For what a man seeth, why doth he yet hope for? But we hope for that we see not, then do we with patience wait for it. What are you hoping for? Paul, what are we to hope for? What did he say? We're to hope for something that we can't see, that we've not seen. What are we hoping for?
Salvation.
What are we hoping for? Are we hoping for an eternal spiritual life with the Father in heaven? John 14, verse 1. Jesus talked about it as he came to his disciples and said, let not your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. For in my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you, I go to prepare a place for you. He's gone. He's gone to prepare a place that we have not seen. But its hope is very real. Now, You know why a lot of Christians are dragging both heels on the ground and bowed-legged and weak-kneed and don't know which way they're going in life? Because, brethren, we spent a number of years putting our hope in something physical. And quite frankly, we see it beginning to dissolve. You know, whenever Israel put their hope in the physical, God always dissolved it. Many times. That's what the Old Testament story is about. He dissolved the physical so that they could see the spiritual hope. The hope that's real is as strong as it's ever been. It's not waned. It's not weakened. The path to it has not been changed. It's there. But I have to latch on to it. I have to concentrate about it. I have to seek for it. I have to put it as my goal for that hope to control my life. So here Paul says, as he brings these Jews in, he says, the purpose I'm here to talk to you is about this hope of Israel. And this is a very real hope. So anyway, they knew nothing about Paul. But verse 22, but we desire to hear thee what thou thinkest. I couldn't read that, but I thought back to immediately to another time that the Apostle Paul was preaching and teaching. What time period? Do any of you remember another time that about the same statement was made to him? He had gone and traveled and he walked up this long hill. And as he walked up this long hill, he saw altars to all types of gods. Where was he? Mars Hill in Athens, Greece. He saw that altar of the unknown God. He stops. He teaches them about the God of heaven. And when all of that jumble is over with, you get down about verse 30 or 31, somewhere in there, 29. Finally, they come to the conclusion, we want to hear you again about this matter. It's interesting what you think. So these Jews here, at least, they're willing to listen to what Paul thinks. They're not sure it's God's word at this point. Oh, you know, our people, our nation today is, our religious world today is rampant on this idea. Even in the church, I see this going on. You know, you have a certain teaching and somebody is talking about it and they say, well, I'll go see what another preacher says about it. You know, what do you think about it? What does she think about it? What does he think about it? And that's what matters. What one thinks does not matter. What God says does matter. You know, rarely have I had an individual come to me with such a question that when they left, they said, well, let's just see what God's word says. They said, well, I'm going to go see what another preacher says about it. So here, though, they're willing to listen to what he thinks because it's intriguing to them. But for as concerning this sect, we know that everywhere it is spoken against. What sect? Christians. What was happening to the Christians?
What was a sect?
Huh? Well, that's their perception of it as being a sect. But what as they perceived the Christians as a divided sect, what did they perceive the Christian as doing? All right, they had turned the world upside down, but look at the text. Everywhere it is spoken against. What does that mean? It's a picture of persecution. The Jews spoke against it. But why did the Jews speak against the church? Because the teaching of the church did what to Judaism? Closed the door on it, didn't it? Finished it. Ended it. According to the will of God, Buck.
Then most of you seeing it now, they thought more of the earthly kingdom than they did spiritual kingdom, and they're
That's exactly their perception. Bob makes a valid point that most of them are, by the way, not only are most of the Jews looking for an earthly kingdom, most so-called, and I use the term very loosely, Christian religions are looking for an earthly kingdom. Brethren, what do you think the battles of the going on in Israel today and all of the support they're receiving from the Western world, what do you think that's about? Right. And the idea is that the Messiah is still going to come to Jerusalem and set up an earthly kingdom. That's what drives that. But the teaching that behind that is wrong. That earthly, that eternal kingdom has already been set up. Colossians 1 verse 13, Derek. Notice Paul's statement here. 13, Colossians 1, 13. Who, God, hath delivered us from the power of darkness and translated us into the kingdom of His dear Son. Now, he's talking to the Colossians that had obeyed the gospel. And the Colossians had obeyed the gospel. In obeying the gospel, they had been translated or moved into what? The kingdom. Don't tell me the kingdom doesn't exist. My friends, in some 50-something A.D., Paul said they were already in the kingdom. They were translated into the kingdom. They were moved into the kingdom. That kingdom exists. And a variety of other scriptures prove this same point. But again, as Paul goes and talks to these Jews, they still have the idea that the Messiah hadn't come, as many as we've noted today also do that. So again, as we turn back to Acts 28, they're ready to hear this, but they have questions. 23. And when they had appointed him a day, there came many to him to his lodging, to whom he expounded and testified the kingdom of God, persuading them concerning Jesus, both out of the law of Moses and out of the prophets, from morning till evening. Hard worker. He persuaded them from where? The Old Testament. Law of Moses and the prophets. Okay, 24. And some believed the things which were spoken, and some believed not. Now, look at 23. He sets forth the gospel message. I have no doubt that Paul powerfully sets forth the gospel message. That's what verse 23 is telling us. Paul is convinced, Romans 1 verse 16, it is the power of God to salvation. He's setting forth the gospel message. He sets it forth clearly. What does 24 tell us? Well, some believed that he taught, and some did not believe it. What caused them to believe? A sincere heart listening to the word takes the word and mixes it with faith, and it brings out obedience. What caused them to disbelieve? The ears are waxed. They don't want to hear. They don't want to see the changes. They don't want to recognize the truth. So the hardness of the heart causes them to reject that truth. The same capable gospel preacher presented the gospel to both groups. Did he not? Was it his fault some of them did not obey? Or was it their fault they did not obey? It was theirs. It was their hardness of heart, their closed ears that kept them from obeying, not the preacher's teaching.
It's always the individual's responsibility to accept or reject.
That's right. And that falls upon the single, each personal individual. A husband's not responsible for a wife. A wife's not responsible for a husband. A parent's not responsible for a child. A child's not responsible for a parent. I'm going down the list. Every individual is responsible for themselves. Now, as that gospel has been taught here, they have the opportunity to obey. Friends, I like this section because it tells us the way things really are. But that's the nature of the gospel. Sadly, not everyone's going to obey when the gospel is preached. That didn't happen in Paul's day, and it will not happen today. Matter of fact is, I think we can go back to Jesus Christ and His teaching. And when Jesus Christ taught, everybody listened to him and did what he said? No. No, you don't remember at one time so many went away, turned to some of them and said, will you also go away? He accused the multitudes at one time of only being there for what? Loaves and the bread, the loaves and the fishes, the meal that was provided. Not the convincing word that he was teaching. Friends, that's always been a problem. Man has always been willing to reject the gospel because of the hardness of the heart. I do believe that there are challenges in teaching the gospel today that have never been placed before us before. I believe there's challenges in having Bible classes and sermons preached that have never stood before us before. You know why? We've got attention spans that are just about that long. You know what's created that? Huh? Yeah, materialism as it's been presented on a certain box in the living room. Did you know that advertisers say and recognize if they don't change what's on the screen within 3 seconds that you're going to surf the channels? So that means every 3 seconds something has to change on the screen to keep your attention. My friends, that is counterproductive to sitting down and getting people to study the gospel because it takes more time than 3 seconds. People want information given to them in bits that flow rapidly by. And that's what we've been geared to. But you know what? The old gospel message still will get to the heart of some and still be rejected by others. But the gospel message is still the hope, the only hope of man.
This goes back to Francis T.
Yes, it goes back to that. I mean, we do what we're disciplined to do. And sometimes when we have the lack of discipline, lack of self-discipline, we allow ourselves to be changed in ways that we ought not to be. All right, so Paul has placed this before him. Not all of them are going to hear. Now, verse 26, he's going to tell us why. He's going to go back and... let's go to 25. And when they agreed not among themselves, they departed, the Jews. After Paul had spoken one word, well spake the Holy Spirit by Isaiah the prophet unto our fathers. Who's Isaiah? Isaiah the prophet. And the prophet said, saying, go unto this people and say, hearing ye shall hear and shall not understand, seeing ye shall see and shall not perceive. Now, here he says, and he goes back and he quotes Isaiah the prophet. Matter of fact, this is talked about in Romans, the 10th chapter also, as Paul talks about the hearing and bringing confession and the change of life also there. But as he talks about this and he quotes Isaiah here, what's Isaiah saying? What is he saying when hearing ye shall hear and shall not understand?
Okay.
Huh?
He described it.
Yeah, he's describing these Jews that Paul's dealing with. Did they not hear? They heard, but what? What kept them from obeying? Their own will. Their will got between God's message and God's will. In other words, their mindset, their thinking interfered with their action of life. And that's what he's talking about here when he said, his people, hearing ye shall hear and shall not understand. Their will interfered with their understanding. What they thought before Paul talked. Okay? And then he goes back again, and as he's quoting Isaiah again, hearing ye shall hear and shall not understand, seeing ye shall see and not perceive. He said, you'll even see things and not perceive really what you saw. Let's talk just for a moment about that. as we've come through the New Testament, we've come through the book of Acts, tell me some things that they saw but they did not understand. Oh, the miracles, the feeding of the multitudes, the stilling of the storm at sea, the healing of the sick. Were not there great evidences presented to show the truthfulness of this that was taught? And yet they saw those things, but what? Didn't understand. How could they misunderstand? Some of them thought sorcery. Some of them thought fakery. Some of them thought, well, it's magnificent, but it couldn't be the Messiah because he doesn't look like a Messiah. He doesn't act like a Messiah. He's not built an earthly kingdom like a Messiah, so it couldn't be a Messiah. So again, in each respect, it was their own will, their own thinking that got into the way of what was going on. Now look at the next verse. For the heart of this people is waxed gross. What does that mean? Hard and thick. They got thick hearts. They got, just to put it in our language, he said, you're thick-headed. You ever heard that phrase? That's really what he's saying. He's not talking about the heart that pumps the blood. He's talking about the mind that won't let anything in because it's so hardened, so seared. Okay, heart of this people is wax gross. Their ears are dull of hearing. What's happened to their ears? They're there. Their ears are all right, but what do? Don't hear it. Close their mind. Tell me how you close your mind to what's being taught.
Refuse to listen to it.
Refuse to listen to it. Won't take in the teaching. Tell me how you close your mind.
Think about something else
while it's being taught. Tell me how you close your mind.
Dismiss it to be
Dismiss it to be untrue, okay? Tell me how you close your mind. Concentrating in the hope of something else? Tell me how you close your mind. That's all good. All those are right. Is there any more?
Mix it with half-truths.
And get those half-truths mixed up in and close that mind right off, can it? Tell me how you close your mind.
By choice.
Huh?
By choice.
By choice, you can choose.
Not reading the book.
Not studying it to see if it's true. Acts 17 tells us that. Putting hope and trust in the wrong place, listening to the wrong thing. Do you know you can close your mind also just simply by being tired? I see it every Sunday morning. You know, a willing mind must be a rested mind that is ready to think and ready to study. Yes. Otherwise, it's a closed mind. And so we can close our minds, and I think that's something we can close our minds in a whole bunch of different ways. The old story is told about a man who sat there, and I've seen this same thing. He sat there, and the preacher had preached there for 20 some odd years, and every time he knows, boy, that man's staying right with me. He's listening to everything I say. And the preacher finally, after 20 years of seeing that fellow sit there and drink up everything, he took him aside. His brother said, I've noticed how intently you pay attention to my lessons. He said, what do you think about when I'm preaching? He said, I use that time to sit there and think about my cattle that I have on my farm. He said, I count through them, I count and remember everyone that my cattle I've seen, where I saw them at, and he said, during that period, every Sunday, he said, I sort that out in my mind to make sure that all my cattle are in place. You can kill the mind. Good. Gary says, we also can kill the thought by not taking action. What's the value of what we hear if it's truth, if we will not apply it?
If you hear the sermon on Sunday, you can take up what you heard, go home and study, and dig deeper to it.
Well, and that way we hear what God says additionally about it, whether it's a sermon or a Bible class or even a discussion I had with a friend. All of that should follow through. Okay, so here Paul has confronted them with this thing that they're not saying, they're not hearing. Okay, 27, the wax grows. We got to get down to the bottom of 27 there, Derek. Okay. Lest they should see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their heart, and should be converted, and I should heal them. Now, they've closed up. They won't hear, but what would happen if they did hear? What would happen if they did see? They would obey him. They would be converted, and what would happen? They'd be healed. Now, look at this. Let's go backwards through this. If one will not see and if one will not hear, they cannot be converted and they cannot be healed. My healing and being converted is contingent upon my seeing and hearing the things of God. That my healing and being converted is contingent of my recognition, my obedience to the will of God. I must do those things if I want to be saved. Verse 28. Be it known therefore unto you that salvation is of God, is sent unto the Gentiles, and they will hear. Boy, Paul takes his turn here. Who's he been speaking to? Jews. He says, if you Jews won't hear it, what? Go to the Gentiles. He'd already done this. He was already involved in taking the gospel to the Gentiles. Who was it designed that must hear the gospel first? By whose design? God's design. Now, that they had heard the gospel, they had rejected the gospel, then it was necessary for the gospel to go to the Gentile world. By the way, I'm glad it went to the Gentile world. Aren't you? You better be. I think we're all Gentiles here. Okay, and so, but that was God's plan. 29. And when he had said these words, the Jews departed and had a great reasoning among themselves. What do? They've got all they want to hear, but they separate themselves off. And what's going on over here among the Jews?
Debate.
A debate. The Jews are debating the things that Paul taught them. Friends, I've seen this. And oh, it's a pleasure to see it. This last time we were in India, I was at one place teaching. And I was teaching on the nature of the kingdom because the brethren there had told me, I said, you need to do a lesson on the kingdom. I didn't have a lesson on the kingdom. I wrote it out in the car as we were going. And said, you need to do a lesson on the kingdom. As I was teaching on the kingdom, a great uproar took place in the class. I didn't know what was going on. Matter of fact, as I stopped and got on to them for being so noisy. And went ahead with the class, and as we finished, C.H. Lazarus come up to him and said, oh, brother, said, don't get upset, it's good. He said, they've never heard about the kingdom like this before. He said, they're debating among themselves about the nature of God's kingdom. He said, they've never heard the idea that the kingdom was already established, was already eternal, was already doing the things that God wanted done. The debate was good. And sometimes that has to happen. If people that believe false doctrine, sometimes they have to work it out through their minds and debate the truth in their minds to come to an understanding and obedience to the truth. I wanted to get done today. Verse 30. Paul stays 2 years in his own house. Verse 31, he continues doing the things that Paul always did. He preached and taught the kingdom of God. Now, that's for the following 2 years he did that. We know, according to secular history at least, that he was released after that two-year period, went ahead and preached the gospel farther, was brought back to Rome again, and was finally executed for the cause of Christ. None of that's recorded in the Bible. But that's what we're told by secular history. Huh? I don't know, Gary. Gary asked the question, is any evidence he went to Spain? I don't know. I'm just not familiar with it. Okay, I do want us to go over the questions. We'll do that very quickly next time. And then be sure you bring your book, Godly Living, because we're wanting to get into that and study a new direction. Again, if you do not have, if you're a member of the congregation here or attending here and do not have a copy of that and want one, be sure you come and see us.